Joe Prusaki is the director of the Statistics Division for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. By the way, he grew up on a small crop and hog farm in Perry County, Illinois. He has a BS and an MS degree in agribusiness economics from SIU Carbondale, an MS in applied statistics from, yes, Purdue University. Go Boilermakers! This is actually Joe's second tour at the head offices of NASS. Between, he was a state director in Iowa for a couple of years as well. And if anybody has chains and locks, now's the time to padlock the door shut. And we'll discuss in detail with Joe just what he has, what the numbers should look like tomorrow.
Maybe,
he says.
I'm on.
So, okay. Joe Prusaki, give him a plug.
All right. Well, when Dave asked me to come and chat with you folks, it was not this, well, I guess so. No, my answer was, sure, I'll be there. Because if one thing, I'm a trash talker. So I'm willing to chat with you a little bit. But before we got to get started, I got to do something. Okay, how many folks have heard of NASS, N-A-S-S, National Agricultural Statistics Service? Do you love us? Do you hate us? Yes. Do you hate us? Why? We are only the messengers.
Rally
killers. Now, I noticed how polite you were to the two groups that were up ahead of me. We are the messengers, and did you hear the number of times they mention tomorrow's report, USDA, those reports? How many times did they mention that? At least once? Okay, there was at least one time. Many times, actually. I lost track after like five. First off, where do we get the data from NASS? From farmers. So the data that's published comes from you guys, all right? I had a really, really neat PowerPoint slide, but Dave and I got miscommunicated there a little bit. So we're going to deal with it. NASA's mission, folks, is to provide timely and useful statistics and service to U.S. agriculture. After January 12th, there's probably some of you guys wonder about that. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll keep going here. I got stories to tell. We were founded in 1863, the year after USDA was founded. Okay, what was going on in 1862, 1863? Civil War. Civil War. The first crop report came out July 1863. First crop report came out July 1863. There was a whole segue or series of information in there about wool. Why do you think there was a whole bunch of stuff in there about wool?
Uniforms.
And also in that discussion, there was a whole section regarding wool production in the disloyal states. Why do you think that was? Know about your competition. Remember they talked about supply and demand and knowing your competition. It might be other parts of the world. Same kind of idea. Those reports were started back there because information is important to make decisions down the road. Not intended to hurt you guys, but intended to make decisions down the road. NASS, let's start off with characteristics. We have no political appointees in our agency. Zero. We're non-policy making. We're independent, objective. And we're unbiased appraisers of America's agriculture. We start off this. We get the data from you guys. We got this, someone in the earlier panels talked about a report coming out on March 31st. It's called what? Prospective Plantings Report? Anybody been phone called the last couple days? No? Anybody get something in the mail? Questionnaire in the mail? Maybe. Somebody come visit you? Maybe. Nobody? You don't want your friends and relatives to know that you're helping me out, right? NASS publishes over 500 reports a year. Over 500 reports a year. And six of those reports are considered principal economic indicators in the United States. Well, I don't know if that means anything to you, but that means it's important to the functioning of this country. Six of those reports are principal economic indicators in the United States. Hogs and pigs, cattle on feed, grain stocks, crop production, prospective plantings, the acreage report in June, and the monthly prices. Why do you think prospective plantings is a principal economic indicator in the United States? That's the first snapshot of what? What this season's crops are going to be. What happens to nations if they can't feed their people? Bad things. Bad things happen. So it's the first snapshot. On part of the agenda talks about, I'm going to talk about NASS truths or myths. NASS truths or myths. How about this one? NASS does not need to survey me because I give all my data to FSA. Truth or myth? Huh? It's a myth. What do you give to FSA? Huh? Everything. Someone over here said everything. Okay, you give them your planted area, right? Do you give them harvested area? No. Do you give them your storage capacity? I heard yes and no. It depends what program you're in. Do you give them your stocks of grain on hand? No. Do you give them your yields? This is FSA. And you're an acre. But if you're in the old CCC, countercyclical program, no. What about your livestock? No. So you give all your data to FSA. Maybe. Some farmers despise NASS. Huh? Truth. Now, I'm going to read. These are recent comments from farmers since the 12th of January. I've got four of them. Now, I don't want to ruin your dinner, so bear with me. All right? Thanks a lot for collapsing the grain market today with your stupid, and the word begins with an A, has three letters, USDA report. You really do farmers a big help. Why don't you report on how much your USDA report costs farmers today? The inside traders made a bundle today. Okay, I sent the guy a note and I said, hey, listen, if you have the name of the inside traders, I'd like to know because that's a problem. Because that's the real issue. And I never heard anything back. Last Sunday, I could pay off my 2009 operating note. Today, not only can I not pay it back, I cannot go to field this spring. Was this what you had in mind? You stole over 16% of my crop in the name of inflation control. Doesn't that give you like warm, fuzzy feelings when you wake up in the morning? Okay, it gets better. We're going to the top two now. From the tone of your comments and your apparent arrogant attitude that us farmers are uneducated, which I don't know where he got that, was out of context, I think it's time you step down as head of NASS. Well, I'm not really head of NASS, but I knew where he was meaning here. I will forward your comments on DTN to my senators and our representatives in the House. Okay, we're ready for the good one? This one's a keeper. As bad as the stench of dead bodies in Haiti must be, it can't even compare to the foul stench of corruption emanating from our federal government in Washington, D.C. Ooh! Does this kind of make you warm and fuzzy and want to go to work in the morning? Two stories. I had this one guy that's calling, one of the dudes that works for me. He's been calling about every week, wants this check for $250,000, because he says that Lance, the guy that works for me, it's personal. That Lance is personally trying to put him out of business. And he wants this check for $250,000. And he keeps calling. Then I had this other guy that was emailing us about every 24 hours after that January 12th report. It was like clockwork. And really, I got worried because he stopped emailing. And I thought maybe he did something. I really did. I thought maybe. And I went and asked on my boss. I said, should I call the county sheriff and have somebody go check on him? Because I knew where he lived. It's like, I don't know. Then I got an email from him, and I felt better. No, really, I thought something, he might have did something crazy. But anyhow. Okay, truths or myths. The USDA secretary tells NASS what the corn yield should be. Who's that's a myth. Someone said yes. Okay. Anybody been to the lockups? There's got to be at least one, yeah. When you go to the lockups, one of the first thing we do when the Secretary of Ag comes in or their representative comes in, who wants to be the Secretary of Ag? How about this guy right here? We'll say, Mr. Secretary, please sign the report. And so what we do is we have the Secretary of Ag sign the report prior to us telling it what's in the report. So once the Secretary signs the report, I'll turn to whoever's speaking and say, please brief the Secretary. I've told that story to friends, quote friends, in Argentina and Brazil, and they said, you can't do that. I said, yeah, we can. They said, what if the Secretary of Ag doesn't like the number? I said, tough. I mean, that's the number. If the Secretary of Ag doesn't show up at 8:30 or by 8:30, you know what happens? The report goes out the door. We publish the numbers with or without the Secretary of Ag. Moving on. Whenever we come up with those reports, you say, oh, NASS makes up these numbers. You know, we do crop forecasts August, September, October, November for corn and beans. Those are for the spring planted crops. And then that annual crop production survey in January, data was collected in December. And these forecasts and estimates, they are not guesses. They're based on numbers that came from you guys. They are not influenced by political pressures, none whatsoever. And they are not. I'm telling you, they are not intended to hurt you guys. The day after the report, I called my aunt. They retired 5 or 6 years ago, and they're a renter I went to high school with. And I said, Aunt Rosalie, we had a report go out, and did Larry say anything about prices collapsing? No, not really. She said, well, he's hauling a lot of grain today, but all week. I said, I think she's had that price like months ago. So like in his case, the panel, if I said, it's control what you can control. And that's what Larry was doing. NASS makes up the numbers. Truth? That's a myth. During the growing season, we do two surveys, like here in Indiana and Illinois. We do an objective yield survey for corn and beans where we actually put plots out in the field. And then we actually do a survey asking your opinion. And then during this season, seeing the data coming from you folks, I saw early on this was going to be a record crop. Based on what you told me early during the growing season, even you guys were kind of hedging your bets. All right? And our objective yield data, record ear counts. In Illinois, up over 350 ears over last year. Since 2005, up over 3,000 ears per acre. Okay, those are real numbers, folks. 3,000 ears per acre, and conservatively a third of a pound. So what does that work out to be? About 1,000 pounds per acre divided by 56. How many bushels is that per acre just on ears? I don't make this stuff up, folks. This is numbers from you. I had a really cool graphic here that you would have saw that. And then when we came out with that January 12th report, we surveyed, NASS surveyed with the help of our field offices. Where's Greg and Brad back there? There's your state directors in Illinois and Indiana. Stand up, guys, so they can see you. So, you know, there's your local boots on the ground guys, all right? So when we did that survey in December, we surveyed over 85,000 farmers and ranchers across the United States in terms of crops. Basically anybody who had hay, through corn, through wheat, with anything in storage. 85,000 people. Out of that, almost 20,000 people had corn. Now you got to say, well, that doesn't sound like a lot, but down in Texas, mostly it's cotton and soybeans and rice. So you have a lot of places that there aren't, you know, it's corn and beans there. Coming from that data, at the U.S. level, and this would have been a great graphic for you guys, at the U.S. level, nearly 40% of the people, you people, nearly 40% of those people on their acres, they had yields over 180 bushels per acre on corn. At the U.S. level, nearly 40% of your corn acres, you reported, you had yields over 180 bushels per acre. That's how you get to 165. What about Illinois? Well, in Illinois, it was pushing 50% that reported, that gave me yields of over 180 bushels per acre. In Indiana, it was up. It was a little bit lower. It was 43% of the people gave me yields over 180 bushels per acre. I was at the Commodity Classic last week. Ran into a group of farmers from Nebraska. Anybody know any Nebraska farmers? They think that football they play out there is football. I know, it's a cult, I think. I don't know. So we were talking some smack, and this one guy goes, well, you know, farmers lie to me. You know they lie to you, Joe. I said, well, so you're telling me that 165 bushels per acre is low? Why would you lie to me high? I said, Joe, you got me. I nearly had a Nebraska farmer. He was mad. He called in, and I was going to the same thing with him on the phone. I nearly got him killed because he was crossing the street someplace in southeast Nebraska, and he was crossing the street, and I told him the same story. He nearly stopped in the middle of the road and cardinally ran him over when I told him about lying. But, well, Nebraska's a nice place, but you got to have a lot of water. You know. Let me see what else I got. That's that. Oh, hey, here's another one. NASS reports impact commodity prices. I said maybe. Now I got to get my cheaters on here because I used to be able to see this little print, but not anymore. You know, I saw my 81-year-old mother yesterday, and she told me about getting old. My grandmother, who passed away a few years ago at 103, she said, "Joe, life goes downhill after 90." She said, she lived out on the farm there near Washington County near Du Bois. You may know where Du Bois, Illinois is. It's down way down south there. She lived out on the farm by herself till she was 90. And then she moved in with my mom for a few years and then to the nursing home. But anyhow, back to the price. Through last year on corn, following the crop report, the day of the crop report, 48 times prices went up. And this is through 1985 through 2008. 48 times prices went up, 55 they went down, and 17 times there were no price changes. A week after the report, 60 times the report prices went up after the report, 59 times prices went down after the report. On average, it's a push. There's a song I was going to put in here. It's by Tom Petty. He's a rock and roll guy, but he's from the South, so it's almost country. He says, "I remember the good times with a little more in focus. But I think you guys remember the bad times with a little bit more in focus." You know, I'm not here to hurt you folks. I'm here to just encourage you folks to report and respond to us. Because to me, this is information. Information is what makes the markets work. You can ask these guys who were up here yesterday, where would we be with no information? I had a guy at the Commodity Classic come to the booth. He turned his tag over so I couldn't see his name. And he said, "Joe, we'd be so much better off with no farm programs, no board of trade, no insurance programs, you guys not telling us how much grain there's going to be? He says, because then, and I'll pick on, where are they? Their ADMs are here. He said the ADMs of the world, that wasn't who they used, but I'm picking on them, they're here. He said the ADMs of the world, they would have to figure out what the price would be. And I said, I don't understand that. But that's my point. I'll finish one. I don't know, Dave, how much, where are we here? Dave, how much time have I got? Keep going. Okay. All right. Well, I want to get the questions because this makes it good, the back and forth stuff. And I want to finish my discussion here about green. You know, we've been hearing about, you know, going green. Right? You guys hear that's in the media all the time. Well, I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking my grandfather was green like in 1935. My uncles were green. I got 3 John Deere tractors too, so I don't know what this is. I'll tell you about my place. I'm a big time farmer in Northern Virginia. I have 6/10 of an acre. The other day I counted up how many motors I had, electric, diesel or gasoline motors I had in my place. I had 13. Well, that seems like I'm a little over mechanized, don't it? Huh? Oh, yeah, they all run. Oh, yes. Oh, that's harsh. Do they all run? Oh. 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 I got a mower tractor. Everybody's got a mower tractor, don't they? You can cut grass with or whatever. I got a little John Deere X300. I got a loader tractor because every guy needs a good loader tractor, you know. I got the smallest Deere tractor you get the loader on it. And then I got this 1953 John Deere 40. Got a straight pipe on it. Baby, that little boy, he rattles and carries on. And I had to get it because the guy across the road, he was a red guy. And he had this little Farmall Super A. It's like I had to get something a little bit bigger than him. Man, I could outrun him and I could outpull him. And then he got rid of the Super A. He's got a C and an H, so I'm looking to upgrade. So if anybody's got a 620 or a 520, I'm in the market because I'm looking to upgrade here. I want to take questions from you guys. I want to take questions. There's somebody over. You got one?
Where are you? I've got two, actually.
Okay.
The first is pretty simple. How does NASS select the farmers they survey, and do they survey the same farmer more than once?
Okay, let's start with that one. Okay, how does NASS select the farmers? Okay, what we do is we maintain a database or a list of farm operators across the United States, and we have a little bit of information about every one of you. Not about like where you're born and all that kind of stuff, but like how big of acres and stuff. And basically, the larger the operation, the higher the chance of being in the survey. So if you're a very large operator, and I'm guessing Brad and Greg in Indiana and Illinois, I think if you got over 10,000 acres, you're probably, is it 5,000 acres, you're considered what we call an extreme operator, meaning you're very important to the ag in your respective states, and you're pretty much going to be in every one of our surveys. Now, there's 2.2 million farms in the United States. There's about 800,000 or so that contribute about 90% of the production. Well, you guys are in that less than 900,000, and then you could cut it off that probably less than 500,000 contribute to about 75% of the U.S. agriculture. So the bigger ones, you guys are going to be in our surveys a lot.
Okay, next question. Would it be helpful, Joe, to farmers if the reports could be put together at the mule barn in Du Bois?
Oh, the mule barn. Hey, somebody.
It's a big crowd, dude.
Oh, yeah. If you're crossing the railroad tracks, if you're going west on that little road that comes through Du Bois, and you go past Paczynski's, there was the old Shell station. Paczynski's used to have a little motor shop there. And you come through. My parents, they're on the east, on the west side. There was a tavern called the West End. They ran that, and with one of my cousins, and then my mother decided that was not a proper environment to raise children, so then they got out of that business, and they got into the grocery store business, and then they got into the farm business. We came from farms, but they were bouncing around. But if you keep going east, you cross the Illinois Central. Well, so that,
We don't need to know how to get to your house.
No. You cross the what used to be the Illinois Central Railroad tracks, but then you cross it. It's right there is the mule barn.
Those sound like
I want to know how to get to your house.
Those sound like the same set of directions I gave to my wife when she was driving from Peoria to come see my house. And she said, what street do you live on? I said, I have no idea.
You just keep going, and then you keep going
east. As it turned out, it was 900th Avenue. Okay, another question. This guy's got one.
Yes, I was wondering what producers could do to help you do your job better. And do you take suggestions on how to improve your sampling, et cetera?
Okay, two things. First thing is, how can producers help me? First off, when you get a phone call from NASS, you should say, thank goodness I was selected. And say, it's my opportunity to tell the truth, because I know those turkeys in Nebraska are going to lie to me. So you guys, the best thing you can do is respond to keep those yahoos from out west from telling me stories. And then the second question is, do we take suggestions,
comments about
data content and how to sample? Yes, we constantly do. We have an ag advisory committee. We have a thing on our website that says, you know, for comments and such. Yes.
Yeah, and actually, Dave bugs you a lot about that, doesn't he?
Dave who?
Yeah.
No, this guy, yeah.
Actually, most of the people in the room that are brokers and are on the air with us, Dave and I will talk to Joe occasionally about what you guys are telling us, if you think it's wrong, and suggestions we might have.
We got one right here. This guy's
right where?
Right here.
Okay.
He's been looking
here
for
we go.
A mic.
One of the things after the last report was everybody was saying you guys didn't take into account the test weight of the corn, and so you missed it because of that. Would you address that issue?
Sure. Test weight.
And when do you start taking it? I got that question.
You got the
here,
same
so.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I don't know what test weight is. I'm just kidding, but I don't know what test weight is. Why? When we do our objective yield survey, we've got 15 feet over two rows measured out. We go out there at the end, and we pull the ears over that 15 feet. We take those ears. We send to the lab. I think, Brad, you got the corn sheller, right? We send it to the lab. They shell it. We weigh it. I'm not weighing a test weight. I am weighing grain weight per ear. Okay. I saw fairly high grain weights per ear this year. Almost 2004-ish. Now, with a rapid increase in ears per acre and a pretty high grain weight, not test weight, it ends up with a huge yield. Now, when you take your grain to the elevator, to the mill, or to the ethanol plant, or whatever. You know, you got your trucks loaded, you run them across the scale. You know about how much grain you're supposed to have in there, but then you're going to get a weigh ticket at the end, and they divide that weigh ticket by 56, roughly the same as what I did. So test weight, like I said, I don't know what the word means, but I'm just kidding because I know you guys hear it. But for what I do, I look at ears per acre. And grain weight per ear.
Hey, Joe, why do you do it that way if it's not marketed it that way?
Because it's the only way I can calculate an actual biological yield from the field.
Is it true that...
there he is. Okay.
Is it true the corn that was left in the field at the report, you considered that was already in the bin?
Okay, I'll address that one. That's a good question. Okay, all right. Back in December 1st when we did that survey and we reported on January 12th, not quite, 10% of the corn in the United States was still in the field. It was less than 10 and more than 5, okay? Record high. We never saw anything like that. Any corn that's in the field is considered on-farm grain stocks. Why? It's not in the grain marketing system yet, right? It's just like it would be if it's on the bin on your operation. It's grain that hasn't hit the system yet. Now, when we did the survey in December, we asked farmers, let's just stick with corn here, we asked them up front, we asked them, how many acres did you seed or plant? How many acres did you harvest or do you intend to harvest? what was your production or yield from the acres you harvested or tend to harvest? Okay. Then later on, we asked about stocks. Then we said, okay, hey, do you have any corn still standing in the field? And if you do, what do you think that will yield when you harvest? Okay, I looked at the data, and I went through state by state just to see if it made sense. What was still standing in the field versus what was everything. States like North Dakota, South Dakota, would you expect a pretty big gap? Yeah, because it's pretty rough up there. I mean, there's still snow waist high up there. And they had the biggest gap in the corn yield, what was still staying in the field, versus what was everything harvested and everything. Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Missouri, probably within 5 bushels on that. But yes, it's counted as stocks. And we re-interviewed folks in Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin to ask them what about that corn that was still standing in the field to get a better picture. North Dakota, South Dakota, I don't know what to do with that yet. Let's wait until the snow comes off the ground. Oh, it's on there.
You had a statement earlier about the corn and the number of ears and the weight. Did you factor in the moisture and to get at that approximate test weight and how late the corn was and how that's going to hold the farmer out of the field an extra month? And also, another issue I hear every year, why don't you use the FSA numbers on acreage that comes out that we have to report in the middle of the summer, and you're not getting it until October or December or January to come up with an accurate acreage? It seems foolish if we have all this computer information, we don't use it.
Okay, let's do the first one. The first one you asked about test grain moisture percentage.
Moisture.
Okay. All right. When we send the corn to the lab, we shell it off, and then we dry it down to 15.5%. Okay? Whenever there were stuff coming about talking about how hard it was for you guys to dry grain down last fall, you're running a lot of propane through, we were doing the same thing in the lab. Brad, your lab folks, it was next to impossible for them to dry that corn down, wasn't it? So we take a before and after. I mean, we do the same thing roughly that you're doing, but in a small scale. We take it, we dry it down. So we saw that. So we get it down to 15.5%. Right. Right, so we get it down to, 15.5%. So we do that. All right. Now, you asked about FSA acres. You have to sign up by, is it June 15th or July? July 15th. All right. I got many wonderful emails from people last summer that says, why don't you guys just hit the button and get the FSA acres? Right? I want to tell you something. FSA, even though you folks have to sign up by the 15th of July, it takes a very, very long time for that data to be tabulated. We get weekly pulls on aggregates, in totals, added up. We get it every Monday. And we watch it grow, just like you watch your crop grow. We watch it, acres grow, until we get to about the end of September and it starts to stabilize. About then, we'll use the FSA acres to adjust in our October crop report. But until then, the FSA data is just not there. The computer systems that one would think would be there are not necessarily there. There are some counties that data is still recorded on paper, and it takes a while to transcribe that information. Well, I hope that's okay over here. Yeah.
I've got a question on the prospective plantings on March 31st. The last couple of years, there's been, it's been a lot different March than June. Have you got any reasons why that is, or have you made any adjustments in the way you survey people or something to adjust for that?
Procedurally, no difference in the past. But last year, many of you probably were in this room thinking, what were you dealing with? What were nitrogen prices like? High. what were we coming off of the fall of 2008? The economy was doing what? Tanking. You were coming off $4 diesel prices from the summer before. You guys, last spring, I don't think people really knew what they were going to do at this time. Financing was a problem. There was all kinds of issues going on. Now this year, maybe grain prices aren't as where you want them to be. Thanks. But the other things, the input costs are coming down, fuel prices, they're on their way back up a little bit. But last year we ran into the situation where North Dakota, there was most of the acres, the big gap was in North Dakota that we ended up with. I mean, they were going through floods and stuff like that. And then down in Texas, there was some issues between cotton and grain sorghum, too. But normally, hey, listen, those reports are only as good as the data I get. Right?
Okay. We've got a couple of questions here. Joe, are you using now or will you be using in the future satellite imagery to not only tell yield, but maybe to look down at the grain bins across the country and tell whether there's something there? I suppose you might be able to do that if they're cold or hot, one of the two.
Okay, first off, satellites. We do use satellites to fly over. However, this is a fact, satellites can only tell me accurately planted area. A satellite cannot tell me what's harvested. Think about that. Tell me why. What does a satellite see? It sees what's called infrared back from the ground up, meaning stuff that's growing. Now think about it. When you harvest your corn and beans, what's the plant like? It's dead. So the satellite can't tell me the difference between this asphalt out here and a dead soybean field that you're ready to harvest. I can't tell them any difference. Okay. Second thing, what about yield? All right. The satellite can tell me how green, not John Deere green, but how green your plant is being growing. On soybeans, it can't tell me your pod set. We can't. And it can't tell me how far along or how well the corn crop pollinated. It can't. It can give you indications or ideas of how well the crop is growing, but it can't tell you how much is there. My friends in Brazil and Argentina would really like to use satellites because they use places they just can't get to. It's impossible, just the way the country is, I mean, infrastructure-wise. Now, about satellites on
grain bins,
that's steel. It's kind of hard to look through. On that, but I've got a side story because Lance, the guy that works for me, he had a farmer call in and says that, Lance, I'm going to have to change the front door on my house. And I said, why? He says, you guys are using the satellites to see where I live, and if I change the front door on my house, I'll change the color on it, you won't know what's really my place. So there are people that think we could really use satellites to see that detail, and I can't.
Yeah, he needs to go to Google Earth to see that kind of detail.
Exactly.
I had a friend who lives in Florida, and because a couple of years ago, I was going to visit his house, and I'm pretty tech savvy, so I had downloaded Google Earth, and I was looking at the front of his house, and I said, hey, is that your daughter that's in the picture on Google Earth? And sure enough, it was his daughter in the front of his house when they went by. Okay. How do you explain, Joe, the millions of acres disappearing and reappearing all the time? And then they comment, is it the sea level changing?
Maybe.
We have faith in you.
Okay. Let's think about this. I don't have that slide. Back in about 2005, we had about 315 million acres of grounds put into what we call principal crops, corn, beans, hay, stuff like that in the United States. Okay, when you guys, as I tell my friends, quote, friends over at EPA, you guys are profit-seeking entities and you react to prices. EPA thinks that you like to do lots of things crazy, but
they have a different view. But you guys reacted to prices in 07, 08, right? Seed a lot more corn and such. Acres went up. There was a drop-off in 2009 back to levels prior to that 2007-2008 run-up. Most of those acres were in North Dakota. There were about 2.2 million acres in North Dakota that didn't get planted because they had the floods last spring, about 2.2 million acres. And there was about 700,000 acres or so in Texas that will count acres twice if cotton gets hailed out and then they seed back with grain sorghum. Those acres get twice. And another reason we're in decline in acres, and you guys see it here especially in Illinois, over in Indiana too, winter wheat acres have disappeared. We would count winter wheat acres, and if they were followed by beans, those acres would be counted twice. Well, with the lowest winter wheat seedings in this country, lowest since 1913, there's a lot less acres to count. In Illinois, you guys were over 1 million acres of winter wheat probably, 10 years ago. Now you're under like 350,000 acres. So a lot of those acres south of here were seeded again, you know, drilled in beans behind it. So that acres disappears there. Other questions? Dave, how am I doing?
We have time for one or two more questions. If you got it, now's the time to ask it. Right over here.
They're going to underestimate.
Okay. The question was, hey, since there's a possibility, a potential that farmers may tend to be conservative on their forecasts and such when I ask them a yield question. During the growing season, the answer is yes, because during the growing season, I've got data back, I used the beginning of time, which is probably like 19, I don't know how far the data we have. It goes back a long time. That we have, that during the growing season, I can tell farmers they're hedging their bets all the way through. But I want to tell you guys something. What you report to me in December, that's it. I take that corn, whatever that corn yield is, I'm going to be within a few tenths of a bushel of what you tell me. Reason why I'm going to be within a few tenths is I have to round. I have to round to the nearest, you know, like 100,000 acres and the nearest 100,000 bushels. I'm going to lose a little bit of rounding there. But I take what you give me in December. Why? Normally, you've run your grain across the scale someplace and you got a really good feel of what's going on. Now, 2009 was a weird year. But during the growing season, yeah, we do trend analysis. There's a gap. We look at it on the charts. It's about that big between what you tell me during the growing season and the final.
Joe, one final question. What's different about tomorrow's report and why?
Okay. Normally the March crop production report is a report you guys wouldn't care about. It's got citrus in there, unless you really like oranges or you're playing the citrus market someplace. But normally you wouldn't care. But we did the re-interview on corn and soybeans. Soybeans we did in South Carolina, North Carolina. We re-interviewed farmers in Virginia and Georgia. And then plus the four corn states we talked about. We're looking at that data, and if there's a need to make any sort of changes in those four states, we will include that in tomorrow's report. If we include any changes to production, the gentleman over here asked about stocks on farm. If we make any change in production, we'll make a corresponding one-to-one change in on-farm stocks. Okay, meaning if we lower production, we would have to lower on-farm stocks back in December because it wasn't there, it wasn't on the farm. Okay, so that's different. But then what we'll do is someone up here earlier, they talked about the WASDE, the supply and demand report. I mean, they may have information that may change them to do something different. I don't know. But there's more information available at this time than we normally have. Anything else?
Give a hand to Joe Persaki, please.
Hang on. One last thing. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank all of you that do respond. And for those that don't respond, maybe I've changed your mind a little bit. Maybe I didn't. But hopefully you can realize it. Hey, you know, in some sort of alternate universe, I could be sitting in this crowd with you. I mean, you'd be farming down there in southern Illinois and scratching a living on that white clay down there. I mean, it wasn't that big a switch that I took where my aunt and uncle were asking me to come and help them. And I said, I don't know if I can or not. But it wouldn't have been much. And I grew up on farm. I have cousins that farm. And they give me raspberries, too. So, I mean, I'm still connected with you folks, you know. But I want to thank you all that took the time, and I want to thank you guys for the questions. Hey, that's what we're here. I want to be that face, that you know, that mysterious USDA statistician there in D.C. Thanks a lot, folks.